This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's a Vibe with Five, Vibe with Five. You already know this.
Right, guys, welcome to Vibe with Five. We are here with Joel Bayer, Steve Howson, but forget them, forget me. This is about Mr. Gill. This is one of the most respected voices in the game. Was the CEO at the football club, Man United, when I was there. Done great things, set many of the foundations that kind of led to us being successful. And I've been badgering him for years to come on the show. And here we are now. He's actually gutted he's here. He almost done a U-turn on the way, but we got him in the building and now the door's locked. Welcome, Mr. Gill. Nice to see you.
Very nice. Thank you for the invitation. Yeah, good. I only did a U-turn because you gave me the wrong directions.
Yeah. Well, I would do... I wasn't going to that. It's a bad start. I was that nervous. I gave him the wrong direction. No, you all right?
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
No, good. Yeah. Do you know what? Let's get straight into it. I mean, like, I'd love to know, like, what? How do you feel? What's your feelings about your time at Manchester United when you was there? When you look back, the success and everything that we had.
Well, when I look back, I think the most important thing was the enjoyment. And it was a privilege to be associated with the club. You know, I actually sort of said back in the... I was a Manchester United fan. I said in the, when was it, sort of around late 70s, my dream job was to be finance director at Man United. Never think it would come around. Then it came around in 1997. I got the opportunity to move up. I was living in the south of England, move up and join the club and as finance director. I was previously finance director for a tour operating company. And to get into the game was brilliant. And then the Premier League had been going, what, for... 5 years, the game was growing. I saw the opportunities there were sort of, how should we put it, you know, pretty impressive. And so, you know, I went up there, quickly got given new responsibilities and then became the deputy chief executive in 2000. Then when Peter Kenyon was lured to Chelsea by Mr. Abramovich in 2003, I was offered the job of chief executive and stayed with that in 10 years. So when I look back, it was fantastic. I mean, it was a privilege to work in sport. I think a lot of people around, if you love sport, you know, to get into it is brilliant. And people would think, you know, what does it mean? And so I would look back and say we achieved a lot, but it was really good fun.
Is it the winning that you love and miss or you think about, or is it the profits that you generated?
No, it's the winning. I mean, I think we always had, and I think it's important in football generally to understand, you know, it's quite unique, or sport's quite unique, because it's, you know, you've got a balance between it being a business and a sport. If you go too far to the business side, you're going to make mistakes. If you go too far to the sports side, you're going to make mistakes. So it's that balance. So ultimately, we at Manchester United and most clubs, I believe, understand that what happens on the pitch drives everything. Because if you do well on the pitch, that the way the football finances are structured, you get more money in. And that money is largely profit, be player bonuses and things like that, but largely profit. And you reinvest that back into the pitch, into players, into new players or players' contracts, into the training ground, into the ground in terms of capacity. Sponsors follow, and that virtuous circle works. So you've got to have a winning team. You've got to have a team that's sort of up there challenging, hopefully winning trophies. And for me, that was the best thing. Actually, winning a trophy was, you know, phenomenal. And you could see the tangible efforts that you put in terms of, obviously, with the manager and his scouts and everyone, you know, putting that team together. And it actually coming off was fantastic. So... you always knew if you win, the rewards are going to come. Mm. It's as simple as that to me. And I think, as I say, if you focus too much on the business and worry about that, you're going to make mistakes.
You used to like the parties as well, didn't you? The parties.
I love the parties, Rio. I remember those moves of yours. They were fantastic. No, but I think that was good, as you know. I think what we did at Manchester United, we every time we got to a final, we had a party.
Yeah.
Obviously, you had to prepare for that in advance of knowing the results. So there were some good parties, and there were parties that... perhaps slightly longer to get going because we'd lost the final or whatever.
But they ended up good as well, though, didn't they?
They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, they ended up good. And I always thought this because I remember the following day, the players, the scouts, you had a bit of a break, deservedly. And I knew that then it was a very busy time because of transfers. So I'd wake up with a headache or whatever. And think, got to go out and try and do this deal, that deal, or whatever. But it was, they were great. And not only were they sort of obviously all members of staff, and I think they still do this, all members of staff were invited to the cup final and things like that, which was good because ultimately, you know, football clubs are, you know, very small in terms of numbers, big in terms of brands, and it's a matter of making sure that we look after everyone the same.
I always get asked about that because your name comes up in alongside Sir Alex Ferguson a lot when people are discussing the past and my time at United, and I always go back to a moment that we had. We used to have like a bit of a leadership group in the change room, like Nev, Giggsy, myself, and a couple of others. And I always use this as a story that I've kind of encapsulates who you are and how I see you, is that we were moaning about having to do too many hours a week or a month commercial work.
Yeah.
This is when the commercial started generating more of money, and so there's obviously more time comes with that. Yeah. And I was there going, we were going, oh, this is out of order. We're not getting paid for our time anymore and we're having to do this. The club are earning so much more millions. Mm. We deserve a piece of the pie. Mm. And then we called a meeting, I think, with you, didn't we? Mm. And you came to it and you sat down and you just let us all rant. Mm. And we're all given our 10 pence worth. And at the end of it, you went, guys, with all due respect, you guys, your contract's now, you're okay to be like that. But anyone who signs... from this point in the small print in that contract will be that there's a designated amount of hours that you have to do. So if you don't like it, you don't sign on again and renew your contract. If you want to renew, that's going to be in there. And we're all just shut up. We sat there and went, okay, we want new deals.
Because it's a balance, Rio. Yeah, exactly. It's a balance, Rio. And I think that's right. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, it's things like that that, you know, we understood, or I understood with Alex, or Alex's education. You know, what you players had to, you know, be fit, ready for the game, motivated, and all that. So it was getting that balance right. And so it's little things like, you know, and the, you know, getting a private plane for certain players to come back after international duty. You know, say, well,
we still love that.
Yeah, but you say, you know, it wasn't necessarily in the budget. But you say, Alex says we've got a big game Sunday, we've got to do it. You just do that sort of thing. Or Manchester United has a fantastic pitch now, but believe you me, before you came and probably after you came, the pitch wasn't that great. So towards the end of the season, you say to, you know, Alex will say, we need a new pitch, you know, and you say, well, actually, you know, that's £750,000 or there or thereabouts. But you say, well, right, we'll find the money for that, because that could be another 3 points. That could be the difference between winning and, you know, not winning the league. And so, you know, those sort of things come in. So I think as long as you understand, you know, that what happens on the pitch drives it, I think you've got a good starting point, and that's always what we try to achieve.
You just spoke there about something that was quite amicably sorted with Rio, but I know he was never a permanent good boy. Talk to me about some of the times where you've had to butt heads against him.
Well, not against Rio. I think Rio was always very polite, as you can see with that Mr. Gill. But I think ultimately, you know, I would sort of, with certain players, you know, you'd have some issues. But by and large, I was sort of removed of that, because Alex would, I'd have butt heads with Alex and things like that, and make, you know, we'd have disagreements or this, that and the other. But ultimately, you know, if Alex had certain issues, there were, you know, there were certain things that had to be sorted out. Like Alex wasn't happy with some of Rio's private investments at some point, if you remember. But yeah, but they were sorted out, because ultimately, you know, it was about, you know, getting the team focused, getting the team prepared and ready to take on the new challenge. So, and I think I always said with these things, as I would fall out with Alex, that, you know, and we could have some quite sort of heated arguments, but, you know, ultimately we were both doing it for the right reasons, i.e. because we wanted Manchester United to win, and we this was for the good of the club. It wasn't for him personally, it wasn't for me personally, about what was right for the club. And the important thing, I think, in any organisation, whether it be on the pitch or off the pitch, is challenging people and not being afraid to challenge people. It's then how you move on from it and don't carry it around as a sort of a grudge or anything like that. And that's what we've tried to do.
Did contract negotiations go smooth?
Yeah, well, all the time.
There's a bit of a thing in some of the fanzines at once about one of Rio's contracts.
Yeah, but there's always a case. I think, you know, there's certain aspects. You know, I think contracts are probably more difficult those days. But over the years, there's certain players went very, very quickly. You know, we look at Edwin van der Sar. Edwin would come in, you know, with his lawyer, his agent, and we do it in an afternoon. And I quite like that, actually, because he sort of, A, it was done quickly, but B, he could hear some of the points I was making, you know, about what the club could afford or what the position was or what our views were, and he sort of heard it, and he was bright enough to say, I understand that, and, you know, a bit of toing and froing, you got it done quickly. But other players were more difficult, without doubt. I wouldn't put Rio in that category.
Mine was about 3 months.
Yeah.
3 months. Yeah, but, Edwin a day out was about 3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
This Mr. Gill thing, where's it come from? Obviously, we're all showing you respect as you come in here, etc. But I think without even meeting you, Rio has always had, he's always had a great image of you to the point where there's no other name that we can call you. If you can, I don't know how to go about it. But where did it start?
Well, it's a legacy of football clubs because you know, if you look at football clubs, and this is before my time, it was all, the chairman was Mr. Chairman. Okay. It wasn't Mr. Martin Ebbers or Mr. This and the other, or you know, Rio, the secretary is Mr. Merritt and things like that. So it's a legacy of that, and I think, you know, out of it, you know, Rio just did it. Gary Neville used to do it. Phil Neville used to do it. More of the English players, not necessarily. I don't think Nemanja ever called me Mr. Gill, but you know, that sort of thing. So I think it's a legacy of that, and Rio just keeps it on, even though sort of. You know, he's long since retired, and we have a different relationship. But you know, he's done that, so that's what it's at. Notwithstanding the fact that I've, you know, I always tell him to call me David, but he doesn't. But that's fine. I think it's a lot of respect, and as I say, that's the history of football clubs, really. So, yeah.
And you mentioned, obviously, you're talking about contracts here, etc. When you came in, you have Steve's let me know quite a lot of information. He's a massive United fan. You were one to take the commercial levels to another level when it came to Man United. How did you prioritise that? What, are you sitting down going, right, these are the areas that we're going to focus on, player sponsorships? How does it go?
Well, I mean, as I say, go back to the players would be the crucial parts in the first instance, but, you know, that's the driver of it. So, you know, I would be working with Alex, you know, throughout the year, although the transfer windows are clearly two periods. We would work throughout the year to look at what the player outlet was like, what the contract situation was like, what the youth team were coming through, what the scouts were looking at. So always planning for that and then getting the action together. So out of that, we had a ratio of 50% of our total turnover, our total revenue, could be spent on wages, total wages. So the players, the manager, the coaches, all the off-field staff like myself, etc. And if we were around that level, then that would be, we'd have a very sustainable, very well-run club, because it would allow us to retain profits, would allow us to reinvest in the business, get new players, and still be attract the best players, and which is the main thing. So
they're still doing that now. Is that
I think there's probably a guideline. UEFA brought in some rules, which I won't bore you with today, because they are quite complicated and whatever. But they are trying to look at that. But I think that's the ultimate thing. The thing about football is there's enough money coming in; it's how it's spent.
Yeah.
And but in answer to questions, you have that. Then the commercial side or the ticket sales and everything like that, we had good people in all of those areas driving and running that to make sure that we could deliver and increase those revenues. Because every pound of revenue extra we brought in, you know, it's 50 pence, could go, you know, we could say go to players and attract the players. So it's all of those areas. And I think what's happened at Manchester United, our vision, so to speak, was to be the best football club in the world, both on and off the pitch. And, you know, you never achieve, you know, that's a goal. It's a bit arrogant that you don't achieve it, but that's our goal. So in order to do that, we have to have not only the best players, the best manager and coaches and whatever, but also the best people in their different areas, whether it be on the commercial side selling, whether it be on the finance team, whether it be in the legal team, whether it be in the ticketing team and executive sales and events. So it's all of that, bringing it all together. And with that focus of saying, a lot of money coming into football, how do we generate more? And therefore, which enables us to put that back into the business, which is the football side.
Well, I had that vision on it and completed it. That's unreal.
I wouldn't mind going back into the business side, but there's something you just said there that I think we have to drill into a bit. You said you sat down with Sir Alex, and I assume one of the chief scouts. Was that the team deciding transfers and targets?
Effectively, yeah. I mean, ultimately, Alex had the say, and then, you know, we work together. So I would have a normal sort of, I'd have go to Carrington every Friday. You know, that would be a formal thing. Go through with Alex, which would go through, depends on what was happening certain times of year, go through what was happening on the players or go through on his issues. And we'd meet for an hour and a half or so, 2 hours, go through that. And we'd have a fairly simple sort of, you know, set of documents which looked at each of the player, traffic light system, you know, what the contract situation was, you know, what the various other things, you know, and the youth team coming through, will they make it, won't they make it? And that would be the driver. And then Alex would be good at assessing it and determining, you know, where we need to look at. He'd give the direction to the chief scout and look for replacements or look at issues and then come back. And ultimately, you know, coming into the summer, obviously sometimes in the winter when we bought, say, Patrice and Nemanja, but by and large, we try to do more of the business in the summer. He would say, right, those are our key targets. And then it was up to me. It's changed slightly now because sporting directors have come in and the whole, how should you put it, those areas have expanded clearly, but I was doing those deals, you know, and I'd have legal support if necessary. And
this, so you'd reach out to the club.
Yeah, reach out to the club, exactly. And contact them.
Phone call, chairman.
Just saying what, you know, what's interested, what's going on, and then, you know, it's, and each deal was sort of the same, but also slightly different, you know. And there are certain players there might be competition for, and more difficult to get. Clearly, other players we knew we would get to. So, for example, yeah, no, but you know, the sort of I remember just on that as a funny story because Peter Kenyon was the chief exec at the time, and we were looking at Rio. So we made an offer for to Leeds. Peter Risdale was the chairman at the time, and you probably heard this story. Anyway, so I went over to Peter Kenyon's house, which is in the sort of in the Cheshire countryside, and Peter Risdale was coming over. And so Peter, we'd faxed him an offer for Rio, and Peter Risdale responded, "Well, that might buy his right leg," and that was it. You see, so wow. So each different, and I think, you know, how you use the agents, how you work with other clubs, and this, that, and the other. But it was, that was the basis of the of way we're doing. But ultimately, to your question, Alex had the full, you know, the final say, quite rightly, and he was the expert.
Like what would now be four or five different people's jobs?
Well, I think it's certainly expanded and things like that. I think it looks like, you know, certain clubs have much more of a, you know, collegiate way to determining who comes in and this, that, and the other. And then the other sporting director working, presumably with the finance director, with the legal director to put it all in. And that, whether it's because it's more complicated now or whatever, I don't know. But ultimately, you know, that was a key aspect of my job, was to actually bring someone in. And Rio was always very interested. I used to get these texts, "Hi, Mr. Gill, who are we bringing in? Who are we bringing in?" during the winter. And I said, no, which is good. Because I mean, two things. One, I couldn't tell him because, you know, whatever. But B, it demonstrated, you know, to me, the players were really interested, wanted to know how the team was improving, what we were doing. And that's what we wanted.
You
know,
when did that negotiation begin? You don't wait till the window opens, surely?
No, no. It depends on certain ones. You complete it. No, some of you may do. I mean, it depends because it was always fluid. But the actual detailed negotiation, the buttoning it down, was sort of, could be after. So, for example, you know, Michael Carrick, for example, we bought from Spurs. I spoke to Daniel Levy. We'd identified him, but I spoke to him at the Premier League meeting that summer, early June, and said, "Look, we're interested in Michael." And as with Daniel, it took three months to do, but we got it done. So each of them are different, is what I'm saying. And you can prepare them.
I feel so late still.
We would try to do it quicker. Yeah, we would try to do it. We'd have our ducks in a row. So we would know what our strategy was, what the targets were. We'd have, you know, the approach we were going to take, the broad parameters of the deal, whether it be on the player wages, whether it be on the transfer fee. We had rules on agents, what we would pay agents at the time, which we adhered to. So all of that. So it wasn't as if you were starting straight away. You had the ducks in a row, but actually then triggering the process might be delayed. It depends. It would be slightly easier because that's a, you know, when it's a domestic transfer, I think it's slightly different to a foreign transfer because you could easily ring up another club, you know, in Spain or Italy and say about it. I don't think that would really impact the two seasons. But, you know, we, you know, suddenly rang up, you know, Spurs, you know, with four games to go and say, "What about Michael Carrick?" It might be a bit more problematic, I think.
It's mad. Going back to your point about asking about players, we won a Champions League, and just as I was walking into the party afterwards, when we were in 2008, I saw you, didn't I? And I said to him, "Look, come on, Mr. Go, who are you buying? I need to know." And you went like, "Just go and have a party, man. And go and enjoy it." And I was like, "Just give me one, please, one."
That was when we brought Berber in, deadline day as well.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, as I say, I like that. And I think if you look at the character of the players there, not necessarily as sort of open as Rio, but a lot of them, you know, I'm sure they're all very interested in what we're bringing, and the best players like the squad to be strengthened, you know, and they like to be challenged, and they always want to know who's going to come in, who's going to get better. And the best players, you would know much better than me, you can tell me, I never felt were worried about their place or their number of games. And in the way that Alex Ferguson managed the squad, the sheer number of games meant you were going to get, you know, there's a certain 11, but all players will get a good slug of games during the year, wouldn't they?
There was a good core of players who probably knew they were going to play.
Yeah.
And they would be the ones probably that would drive, wanting to know, and wouldn't be fearful of who's coming when.
Correct.
Players on the periphery would be like, okay, hopefully someone will come in my position, do you know what I mean? But talking to Sir Alex Ferguson, the boss, you spoke about butting heads and arguing at times. Like, what were his standout characteristics for you?
Well, I think that a couple of standout ones. I think one, obviously, he was a winner. I think two, you know, his contact base and his knowledge of football was encyclopedic. And I think that was one benefit we had going back to the point about scouting, because he had a lot of tentacles around. We would have a scouting structure, clearly, but he would know enough people, say, in Germany to speak about a player or this, that and the other because of his relations he'd build up. But B, you know, people used to say to me, you need a psychologist in Manchester. I said, we've got the best psychologist. Why do we need to employ a psychologist to bring that in? But I thought he was just his sheer positivity and his, you know, belief of winning. I remember when I go into matches, and I was going back to this point about Friday mornings, I go in and see him, and we'd be playing Liverpool that weekend away, or City, or a big game in the sort of scheme of things in the league.
Not Arsenal.
I'm not going to comment on the team.
But no, Arsenal fan, yeah. Big Arsenal fan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not Arsenal actually at the time. No, it was.
Wow.
You go in, and you know, I'd be a bit not nervous, but you know, apprehensive about the weekend, particularly the away games. I'm much more confident at Old Trafford, but some of the away games, and we were going to win every game. No, you go in, and I'm sure that came to the players. I never went in, we can beat them this weekend, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other. And I think that's a great skill to have, you know, that sheer belief. And obviously we didn't win every game, but obviously we won more, drew more than we lost. But you know, that I think that was a real sort of thing. And I think the other key thing for me, and I tried to do it myself, is he was a decision maker. He wasn't afraid to make difficult decisions. And it's easy in life to go along, you know, it's okay, we'll see how it pans out. But I think you've got to make decisions. You've got to say, you know, well, actually, you know, do the analysis by all means, check it out, but then actually go ahead with it and not look back. And I don't think he ever made a bad decision in his own mind. He clearly did, but he never made one because he was always looking positively about it.
One of those decisions was like Beck's.
Yeah.
Like, even that situation's a tough decision because he's such a big personality at the football club and has the image, etc.
Yeah.
Are you just this waiting for the guidance of him, or are you input as well? Or?
No, on those sort of things, he would ask, and I mean, you know, that was fine. You know, he not ask me, but Peter Kenyon was the chief executive at the time. He'd have discussions with the board, and he let them know. And similarly with Wayne, you know, he had an issues with Wayne, and we would have big discussions in terms of, you know, at one point, you remember, and we had discussions, and he'd speak to me about that, and I'd point out certain issues. I remember doing a decision tree to sort of try and help.
Was you going to let him go?
No chance. So I think that was good. And I think the other thing is, you know, he could recover well. You know, I don't know, you know, again, you know, after a tough weekend, he would sort of, you know, he would come in, I'm think, really positive about the next game. And really sort of, you know, and I think that spirit and sort of lifting everyone, because you lose a big game, you're all a bit down, but then to come in on the Monday or whatever and look forward to the next one, I think it was very good. So, and I think all of that, and as I say, his knowledge is encyclopedic to this day about football, and you know about players and things like that. So it's quite funny. One quick funny story to show the enthusiasm Alex Ferguson. You know, when we lost to Real Madrid and Nani got sent off in 2013. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And we knew it was going to be Alex. Oh, I knew it was going to be Alex's last season, and so we didn't send him out to do the post-match conference, press conference. And we sent Mike Feeden out, even though UEFA slapped us with a fine. But we did that, and it was that Turkish referee. You remember?
Yeah.
So come the summer, it was, you know, August. It was a Champions League playoffs, and I was in London. And the phone rings, it's Alex. He said, are you watching the playoff? And I think it was PSV versus someone. And I said, no. And he said, guess who's refereeing? Yeah. I said, I probably can guess his yet. And he still can't referee. He said, his language is a bit more choice. You know, that's my point. So he's still got that. I think that's right. And I think, you know, that whole winning ethic. And if you don't have a football club that actually, you know, is there, wants to win, then, you know, and that's its goal, then you might as well give up.
You've mentioned all the positive traits about Sir Alex. Obviously, you mentioned getting into arguments with him. Did you ever receive the famous hairdryer treatment?
Yeah, a few times. Yeah. But I can give something back. Perhaps not in the, mine was probably not the biggest hairdryer, but it was, but I think that's fine. And I think, you know, Alex is very black and white, as we know. But I think, you know, my point is he doesn't bear grudges. And you go out of the room and he ring up and he might throw a bit over the top there and apologise and you move on. So that's, to me, you know, is a mark of his management style and things like that. And I think, you know, so in other words, knowledge, experience, intelligence, he's a good people person, and being decisive for me, you know, what I would categorise him as.
The Roy Keane incident stands out as something that he was obviously involved in with Sir Alex, which might actually be a little bit of a counter to doesn't hold a grudge. But did Roy Keane and David Beckham both have to go? Was that important at the time, or was there maybe other options that might have been better fitted for that?
Well, is that
with hindsight?
With hindsight. David Beckham, I don't know, because I think we brought in Ronaldo and things like that. I think he was there. Roy, you know, it was a difficult situation. Rio was around the MUTV interview, and I think the decision was made for him to go, you know, there and then, which to me, you know, probably was the right one at the time.
It was a quick one, wasn't it?
Quick decision. One, very quick, but he had to move on. The team was, you know, struggling a bit at the time, so he wanted to make that decision. You know, hindsight's very sort of, how should we put it? You know, very useful to have. But I could do, being sort of a bit more in the middle, I could probably go pros and cons of both, to be honest. But I think, you know, and I've said this to Alex, my only, you know, one of my regrets is that they were both so great for each other, and to see them falling out, I think it's a pity. I mean, I honestly feel that he was a fantastic captain, and they meant a lot to each other, and you know, for that to break down, I think it's very difficult. But I think you've got two highly motivated individuals of their own mind, and it's come to that. But you know, I think, you know, we should celebrate what Roy did for the team, which he was fantastic for many, many years.
Do you reckon they'll ever get back, reconcile?
I can't speak for them. You know them as well as I do, Roy. I like to think so, but you wouldn't say so at the moment. But, you know, I think, let's see.
You said it was a quick one. How can something like that be made?
There'll be issues in the summer and things like that. Yeah. That's the point about football. You've got to make a quick decision and think, move on. We were on tour and there were issues there.
There was issues with like accommodation and with the management and the staff. The manager, the assistant manager, Carlos Queiroz at the time, flare-up happened when we were there, and then obviously Mr. Gill gets involved in that. But then this situation happened during the season. And it was like a big thing. It's like it's like a pantomime almost. And then the next day you come in and it was done. And I think I read Sir Alex's book and he talked about if you let things linger, they become a big problem for the squad.
You get involved when it comes to players and such. Have you ever had to get involved with Rio? I know you, for example, the drugs ban.
Yeah.
You said.
That was quite a baptism of fire, because that was 2003. I'd taken over, so he gave me this hospital pass. Thanks, Rio.
It was just a little test, wasn't it?
It's very unfortunate. Yeah, it was. And I think, you know, everyone knows that Rio, you know, didn't take drugs, and there wasn't a drug issue, but there were, I think, if I look at it, I think, you know, I probably, possibly or probably would have handled it differently. In other words,
we've never spoken about this before. And only, what would you have done differently then?
What I would have done differently was, I mean, we were very legalistic in our challenge. We used, I think I've learned over the years, sometimes in football you can be too legalistic, whether it be challenging UEFA or whether it be doing these things. Sometimes there might need to be it. But, you know, if I look back, our legal challenge, we were very supportive of you, quite rightly, and we thought it was outrageous what they were doing. But I think if we'd have not gone down the legal route, and we were quite technical in arguing against it, then perhaps, you know, we could have had a more lenient sentence or got nothing or whatever. I just think we went, you know, a bit of siege mentality too early on it. And I think, and I know we come out and say, you know, Rio said, look, I shouldn't have done it, which you did, you know, I made a mistake, or, you know, and I did it, but nothing there. You never know what people do. Now, people at the FA may have had an agenda to, you know, get him and get Manchester United. We will never know. But I just think sometimes if you push it too far down the legal route, in it, which is a football on a football matter, you appeal to people better, your great behaviour of the time, your service to the club, your country and the club, you never know what would happen. Mm. So you're right, I've just thought about that, but I'm not thought about now, but I had thought about it over the years, and I don't know the answer to the question. Mm. So I think the club could have been very supportive of Rio because we didn't have any issue with it. But at the same time, perhaps our approach to the authorities could have been perhaps a bit more conciliatory, or in this another, it may have got a different outcome. Because then we that screwed the season because we went to Wolves, you know, played.
Yeah. And that was my last game.
Yeah, I just come back, flew in from Monaco. We bought Zaha, not Zaha, Louis Zaha, Zaha. Yeah. And then that was your last game. Mm. We lost 1-0. Remember?
It was mad because we were top of the league then as well, yeah. And it was. You did try though, because I remember we drove down. Remember we drove down to the CEO of the chief executive,
David Davis's
house. And I remember I felt like a kid, right? Yeah. We walked into his house, the CEO of DFA with Mr. Gill and Sir Alex Ferguson, and they went, right, you go and sit in there, Rio, in this little room. Yeah. We're going to deal with this. And they just walked in there, and I just, there was obviously back and forth.
I think there were different agendas, you see. I think he might have been okay, but, you know, there are other people there. So that was the unfortunate thing, because it wasn't, you know, it did impact the club certainly, in the season. And I think
ever feel United were made an example of at times with instances like that? Because as a fan, it feels like that.
Possibly, yeah. But you never. I don't think you can worry too much about that because you're not going to change it. I think for example, that time, I forget the year now, Rio, when Wayne got done at West Ham when he started screaming and that was ridiculous as well. You know, I know we did all these examples of other players swearing and not getting anything. So I think there was an element of that. And so we had to fight our corner clearly, but I don't think you should, you know, chew yourself up on it, because one of the benefits of being United, everyone, you know, is, you know, hopefully admires you and want and jealous of you to an extent, and you've got to do all that. So, but I think, you know, you just got to look at these things quite carefully. Mm-hmm.
You spoke about players exiting, Raheem, David Beckham, some of the players coming in, Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah. Now, first of all, how did that go about, and what impression did he give you when he walked through those doors?
Well, I think we never really heard of him, had we? Because we played against Sporting, and he came in and took everyone by storm in that friendly, and we went and got him, and then we developed a very good, you know, in the first game came on against Bolton, you know, his dreadlocks and his teeth, and you could see that there. And I think, you know, again, Rio would see him, but you know, I think he was very. You know, from the off, and speaking to his agent George Mendes, who looked after him for many, many years, you know, they were so sort of, how should we put it, he was so motivated to be one of the best and to be up there, and I think he was very well managed. So I think, you know, for us to have him was brilliant, and what he did, and you know, after the first season, we, you know, in 2004 going to cup final, met George Mendes, we, you know, gave him another contract, and George was a very good agent for him, I felt, or we felt, you know, managed him correctly, and we always felt that he would move probably to Madrid at some stage, and that was we're trying to push out as long as possible. But I think his whole attitude and what he did for the club was phenomenal.
How did that come about? Because I remember I was one of the players that was always talking to him about staying. I'm hearing you're looking to you might be going and whatnot. Yeah. Come on, man, you got to stay. And he ends up kind of almost, well, you tell me how it happened in terms of staying that extra year.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that going back, I remember in Moscow getting the questions on the outside the hotel off that party you mentioned, you know, were a lot of them about Ronaldo because there's rumours around. And so, and as I say, I think Carlos, obviously being with Portuguese, etc., thought he would go at some point. And we said, well, you know, it was a bit of a shock when there was, you know, he was, how should we put it, indicating he might like to go that summer. Mm. And we said, we can't have that. So, in a nutshell, you know, we agreed that, you know, he would sign a new contract with us, but there would be an exit clause, you know, the following year.
If they hit a certain number.
They had to hit the number, you know, 80 million payable upfront in our bank account.
Ooh,
and which was a record at the time. Mm-hmm. That was that. So, you know, and they had a certain period after the end of the next season in which to exercise that option. And then, obviously, I remember in Rome, we unfortunately lost to another party, but it wasn't good. We lost to Barcelona, and, you know, speaking to George and you know, Mendes and his legal advisors, Ronaldo's legal advisors, it was clear they were going to exercise it. And then,
hindsight on that, how much did we mug ourselves off at 80 million?
Well, yeah, hindsight's very good, yeah. But at the time, it was very good. But you're exactly right. I agree with everything. But at the time, it was great. It was the time. Yeah.
But to get 80 million up front, that's great. The key. Normally, what happens? Yeah. It normally installments, over 4 or 5 years.
Over the duration of the contract. So, look, he was a brilliant player, and we didn't want to lose him. But, I think you need to understand, that if we didn't do something like that, then he would have been upset, he'd been exit, and, it was difficult. And I think no one could argue with what he did on the pitch for that whole last season.
I heard a rumour, Mr. Gill. I'd like the truth, please. Yeah. In 2012, did you go and try and negotiate for Ronaldo to come back?
No.
Boo.
Mm. He's got a lot of these things, he says.
No.
See?
No, that was going back to that point, going back to winning, because I remember Rio was there, in 2012, the last day, defeat, or we won, but then City, unfortunately, beat.
When we drew the league?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. And we said, well, so going back to your point about players and, Alex and the team, Rennie or Mick, and analysing where we'd fallen short that year, a number of goals. So we set out to get Mr. Van Persie.
Oh, yes.
And that was it. And, so we went out and got him that summer and, lo and behold, Judy scored 30-odd goals and won the league.
Was that difficult?
Yeah.
What was difficult about it?
Because Arsenal dealing with Arsenal wasn't too bad, dealing with Ivan Gazidis and things like that, and the player wanted to come and his agent. So I think that was all okay. But Arsenal, clearly,
that he knew what he was losing, didn't he?
Knew what he was losing.
For 25.
And he had he clearly now they get on well, but at the time when they were adversaries, had a difficult relationship with Alex. But in the end, we got it over the line, and Alex spoke to Arsenal, and they sort of tweaked it a bit at the end to give them a bit more. And so it was difficult. But that's again, I think going back to your point, we can't be, clubs can't be seen to be just giving up their assets, easily without a bit of a fight and things like that. And he knew what he was losing, and we got a great goal scorer out of it.
How close were we to getting Ronaldinho? Because I know we got Ronaldo in the end, which was a great deal for us, but that summer, I remember speaking to the manager, walking out to training, and he just looked like there was a cloud over him. And he said, I've just missed out on getting...
That was Mr. Kenyon's thing, wasn't it?
I don't know, it's getting the final thing, but to me, we were never that close.
No? Okay.
Well, you could assess it because... I was involved.
That's
a big
myth busted, isn't it? Because loads of people were so sure.
I thought that.
No. We were there, and I went over to Paris when he was there. He met with his brother Roberto Assis, who was the his agent, and this, that, and the other. We discussed it. Then we met them. We being Peter and I met them at Manchester Airport, and we went through and did all the.
Numbers.
And they got agreement on the wages and this, that, and the other, and what we pay the agent. And then Peter sort of went back to Old Trafford, and I said I looked after them and, took them to their flight and this, that, and the other. And I didn't get a good vibe.
Was it?
Oh. No, because Barcelona were in there, and I'd done enough deals or seen them to know, it's like when you're buying something, they really want to come, they don't. You get something there. And I just felt that... If Barcelona hadn't been there, we'd have got them. But if Barcelona were there, and that was clearly his first choice, Brazilian going down to Barcelona was, with all due respect, notwithstanding the success of Manchester United, I think, that was his first choice. And if they haven't come up with the goods, we'd had all the deal done, the numbers were done. So I don't think it was anything that we did wrong. It was just that Barcelona came wrong. Mm. So to answer the question, we were close, but, no cigar.
Was there any deals that you look at and go, that got away, man. That was one of the ones that I just close and
top ones,
big ones that you think, well,
we didn't get all the players we wanted, certainly.
Come on, give me one name, Mr. Gill.
Give us a name.
We didn't get one.
There must have been a big name that
everyone's
you were trying
retired
to get.
Now, surely.
Exactly.
Give me a name.
I'll let Fergie say that. Names there. It's quite amusing small office at Old Trafford, haven't got any more clearly, but after I left, and just because I used to go and then do some work with UEFA or whatever and use that, they up from the archives came all these files, and they were all the, because every player that we were after, or any conversation I had, I'd do a file on him.
Oh, unbelievable. So have all you got the, it here?
No, it's fantastic. And I've got it up there, and you know, if I had a, even I had a text from an agent, I'd note it down. So I got all the record of everything we got, and I looked at some of these players. I'd love to tell you what they were. It's really interesting conversations and things like that. You know that
we now, can do that in the part two episode.
Okay, no, but it's so I would do that. I have a record of every conversation, and that's what I did, because every agent who called me, I would always return their call, and on the basis that you know, we may not be interested in the player then, but he, 2 years down the line or 4 years down the line, he may have a player, so he remembers how you dealt with them. So that was good. So that some got away.
So,
sorry, quickly, go on. I can't let you get away. Yeah. What about, this was a big moment as well in my, and I remember speaking to you about this in the summer. I was in Morocco, I'll never forget, and you called me about it to go and speak to him. Tevez.
Yeah.
And he went to City, obviously, and I think you was going to Rio, can we speak to him and get hold of him? What happened there?
Well, Tevez, we had him for 2 years, and then we had the right to buy him for 25.5 million, and we exercised the option, to do that. But I think, you know, you would again know it better than I. But you know, the second season, whereas in the first season it was him, Wayne and Cristiano up front. The second season we brought in Dimitar and things like that, so it was a bit more, you know, perhaps he wasn't in the team as much and this that, and the other. So, and I think ultimately the people who controlled him, because he was a third, he wasn't owned, you know, by a club. We weren't dealing with a club. It's the people we did the deal with to get him in for the 2 years, which was fully clear by the Premier League and FA. they basically got a lot more money, you know, by taking him to City. And so that was it. That became a financial thing for them. And I think if Carlos had been insistent on staying at Manchester United, then he could have stayed at Manchester United, because we said we were prepared to pay that money for him to stay. But ultimately, if he felt for whatever reason better opportunities at City or whatever, and you know, then it wasn't going to work out, because the owners of his rights, so to speak, and it's not allowed anymore, but at the time it was, the owners of his rights, you know, effectively almost doubled their money, I believe. So.
And you go to Rooney, and when he was looking, there was rumours about him going to City and stuff. As the leader, the CEO, how do you navigate that situation?
Well, you have to do it with Alex, but how do you navigate it is basically to sit down with the agent and try and sort something out and try to sort of make sure that, you know, he understands what he's got at Manchester United, how in terms of his wider role and wider possibilities, and work it out and try to come to a compromise and you know, show he's now the all-time leading goalscorer at Manchester United, all these things to try and work through. And sometimes players will say, well, it's happening because we were perhaps in the doldrums. How are we going to build the team up? And you have to explain that, yeah.
I think that's one of his main questions, wasn't it?
But, you know, ultimately, you know, things go in cycles in football. Hopefully for Manchester United, the cycle is going to be up now. But, you know, everyone was on the same sheet. We all wanted to improve the team and get winning again. So he could see that and buckle down and do it well.
And we're talking about exits and stuff like that, your exit out of the club. Do you look back at that now, is it, with hindsight we keep mentioning, but do you look back at that time and think, I've done it perfectly right, or is there a little bit of, you know, maybe could have done it differently or whatever?
No, I think the timing was right. You know, I've been in it 10 years, I've been at the club 16 years, I love the club in 10 years, and I think the old saying, it's better for people to say, ask why are you going as opposed to why aren't you going. And I just felt, you know, from the outside, you probably people would know a difference, but I was sort of, you know, had a bit less energy in certain areas. So for example, I mentioned that I was, you know, I always call back an agent when they contacted me and this, that and the other. I was getting a bit more, you know, how should we put it, less enthusiastic about doing that. So sometimes you can tell that, you know, and it is, you know, it was a privilege, it was an honour, it was fantastic, but I didn't want to be in a position whereby I just, you know, not going through the motions, because I wouldn't have done that, but wasn't putting as much in as perhaps I was done in the past. And I always think also organisations need new ideas, new people, new enthusiasms and whatever. So I don't, you know, you never know, hindsight, as we've had in this conversation, is great, you know, and there was nothing like, you know, being the chief executive and winning a trophy, I can tell you that. Mm. You know, we've won a few trophies since I stepped down. I'm still the director of the club, but it feels great as a fan, but it's not, it isn't the same. And you trust me, you know, you know, you're there. So you never know. But I don't regret the decision. I look forward. I've managed to stay in football through UEFA and other responsibilities. It's not the same, clearly, but it's club football because that is clearly the best. But it's nonetheless, it's enabled me to be involved with a game which I love and have enjoyed for all my, since I was a wee lad.
Mr. Gill, did you plan leaving the same time as Sir Alex, or how did that happen? Did you talk to him first, or
No, I sort of decided. So I told him in January of that year, and then you know, and he decided thereafter. I think he clearly, you know, I think he discussed it with his family, and you know, and. Determined that he wanted to get out with success, and we clearly had a successful season in terms of the league, etc., which he clearly deserved. And he's much more important for him to choose his own timing of leaving than me. And I think that was that's how it happened. A few people have said it was wrong to both go at the same time, etc., but it is what it is. We've got to look forward now.
Did Mr. Woodward ever contact you for advice when he took over?
Not a lot. But occasionally I was there for him, and I was conscious because it's quite different. You know, normally a CEO, you know, finishes at the company and you know, moves on. The family wanted Glazer to keep me as a director because I was still involved. And I got my UEFA role there and then, and I was still involved with the FA at the time. So yeah, Ed did. But again, I think I wouldn't, you know, and I was available, but I think he wanted to plough his own furrow and also, how should we put it? You know, was comfortable in what he was doing. So we had a handover because effectively, so I did introductions to him, say from the January through to the June when I left with agents and certain things like that. But, you know, so, you know, I think he was comfortable with what he was doing when I was available.
How have you seen the post yourself and Sir Alex Ferguson era of Manchester United? It's been difficult as a fan as well to watch and to be a part of.
I think you're going to put it a lot politer than I would.
Yeah, it's been very difficult and it's been very disappointing. And I think, you know, the football's only got bigger in that time, as we've seen, whether it be, you know, the investments coming in, the growth of the game in terms of media revenues and growth of the Champions League, the Premier League, etc. And I say, you know, it goes back to the point, early part of the discussion, it's all about the players. And I think, you know, if you're honest about it, the recruitment's been disappointing. It's been disappointing. It's not, if you look at the players and the investment, the amount of the investment, the club has put money into players, you know, has, you know, over the years. And it's, you know, but, you know, for whatever reason, not got the right players. I don't know if it's the structure, the scouting, the negotiations or whatever. It's had some disappointing buys, it has some successful buys, but more often, you know, a lot of them being disappointing in terms of the standards we're at.
I'm a bit confused. If you've had so much success over the years, surely there should be more communication. Like, for example, I work for Rio, right? Yeah. If I was going into an area that he had more knowledge in, I would reach out, you know, probably regularly. Especially, you guys are like, from the outside looking in, Man United is like a family club, right? As big as it is. For me, it makes more sense for me to like reach out to Rio, and hopefully you would advise, right?
Yeah, but I think that you've got to be comfortable in your own skin doing that, and I think, you know, things move on, and so it's not for lack of availability. It's for people to determine that was there, and they would change some of the approach. And as we've seen that today, I read about Liverpool's replacement of Jurgen Klopp. It's going to be very data driven. Well, data has become much more prevalent in football today. They have XGs and all this sort of stuff. I don't understand it all.
Steve loves it.
But they have all these things, and it's changed. So the game has moved on. So, you know, and I think, you know, the last player deal I did with Alex was, you know, Wilf Sahar from Palace in January 13. So that's the last time I dealt with an agent. I don't know, you know, and all these things, I assume that's moved on and these sort of things. So I don't disagree with the point you're making, but again, you know, you've got to move with the times, and football in particular is a very sort of fast moving environment, and therefore you've got to be cognizant of, you know, who the movers and shakers now versus then, and deal with it. So, yeah. All right, so my overriding thing is, you know, Manchester United, it's, you know, is, you know, as I say, it's been a disappointing 10 years, let's be honest, you know, in terms of achievement, particularly, you know, with the teams who've done well in our cost. But yeah, it's not a lack of investment. I think looking at the quality of that investment, and it goes back to the some of it. I think is around the type of player. You know, we bought. We were always very much looking at people like you, Rio, when you came in, or Ronaldo, or Wayne, the young players who were clearly the best in class, so to speak, in their particular area, and we could then look to work with them and give them a great career for, 8, 10, 15 years, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And that's what we're all about. And Alex was much more motivated in working with young players than... And Robin was effective. I think he was possibly, well, Edwin, slightly different for goalkeeper, clearly. But I think Robin Van Persie was the oldest player we bought, when he was 29 when we bought him, and that was the oldest we'd ever bought since I was in there. So, but I think Manchester United's got a lot of great strengths. I think we've got a new investment coming in with Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Dave Brailsford's looking at the club, so I think there's a bit of momentum there now, and a bit of hopefully it's a catalyst for change. And
it's a great segue, because my next question, I'm just sitting here queuing up, is Omar Berada starts as the new CEO of Manchester United very soon. What is the first thing on his inbox that he needs to get sorted?
Firstly, I think I think it's a good idea they've appointed from outside. I think someone coming in with some new ideas and a new perspective, coming from clearly a very successful club. Yeah, the first thing that I got in, and I think you've seen it in some of the announcements, is to really, focus in with Dave Brailsford and whomever on that side is on the whole recruitment, scouting, negotiation side. To get that understand that, get a focus back on that, get that sort of hopefully working better to actually then deliver those players we've got. Because, there's some great teams. They've just negotiated an extension of the Adidas deal, superb deal they've done there. And they've got other sponsors coming in all the time. So that, I think, is working pretty well. But if you then ally that with a great team performance, it's going to go even better. What they're doing on areas like digital, I think, is fine. So, if I was coming in, my focus would be, do an audit of what's gone wrong in the past and how do we put it right. And once you've got that, you can then build it out and get that. Because if you look at it in Rio, through Carrington, or I walk around Old Trafford, there's so many people there. Every football club has people who've worked there for many, many years, love the club and they want to get there. And they just need a bit of hope. They just need a bit of, aspiration, and they see that coming back. So that will then galvanise them into working harder and more motivated. And, that's, to me, really what... is needed. So that would be I would be doing that, and then basically getting back to the philosophy that that we're sort of all one club. And I for me, management is about, as a CEO, I would it's treating everyone the same. As I can say throughout my career, I've seen people who can manage laterally and upwards, but the ability of a good manager is to manage downwards, to get on with people who are doing it in the ticket office, or in the, doing the electricity, or all that work, and it's that sort of thing. And I think if you can get that in and show that sort of empathy, so to speak, with all the employees, he'll make a great start.
In 2004, you said that.
I didn't actually. This is no one has shown.
It's not another one you got wrong, Jesus. What's going on here?
No one showed it, but you're right. I'm a quota to that. I wouldn't say. No one's done that. And I remember seeing it, I think it was at Wolves actually, and put the debt is a road to it and said Gil. So we got a lot of grief over that.
Okay. But debt Manchester United have had for the last 18 years under the Glazer ownership, that's been problematic, would you agree?
I think the capital structure from we went from a debt free company or club to one with debt. Has been brought certain challenges, but what I would say is, and people don't necessarily believe Alex and I on this. And all the time we were there together with the Glazers from 05 to 2013, they never ever said no on a player or anything like that. It didn't preclude us from spending money there. Now that's not to say, looking forward, the debt and the interest costs, clearly, have some implications or have some ramifications. Yes, but all I can say is. Whilst I didn't agree, no one can show me I ever said that. That's not to say I wouldn't have used it as part of a negotiation or part of the discussion around the takeover, that going from a debt-free club to a club with debt has some ramifications, has some issue. I didn't say it was a road to ruin. I wouldn't have stayed if I felt it was a road to ruin. But nonetheless, you know, we sort of, you know, the Glazers, you know, in my opinion, gave us what we wanted. Now, that's not to say I haven't been around close to it, in the, you know, from 2013 onwards, but that's what it's at.
Does the debt, because the capital debt is more or less what it was in 2005, and the interest payments have been somewhere in the region of 1.6 billion in the last 18 years. That would be a whole squad of £100 million players potentially. Do Ineos need to fix that first and foremost to move forward with the club?
Well, I think what Ineos need to do, which they are doing, is doing that audit and understanding what all the football structures and all of that. And I think if you get that right, you will be in a position whereby they can start to improve the performance on the pitch, get the returns in and start to look at it. And the capital structure may not be within that. But certainly, you know, I think, you know, the money's one side of it and that capital structure, but the actual organisational structure and the people you got in those slots, in those positions, and how that's all worked out. So I was saying, well, how come we bought that player? Who looked at that player? What was the scouting? You know, how did that all work out? Who negotiated it? And all those sort of things to be looked at.
Have you seen the reports recently that we valued the likes of Antony at different prices and still went with the... I think that's just sort of examples of what you was talking about, really.
Yeah, I think you've got to, those questions got to be asked, to be honest. I mean, I don't know the answers. I've seen the reports, but I'm always slightly skeptical of what's written in the papers on football. But I don't disagree with the point you're making, and I think that's to me, you know, until you identify the problem and understand what's caused it, you haven't got a chance of fixing it. So hopefully that will happen, and they will be in a position whereby, you know, better decisions are made going forward. But it's, you know, it's never, you know, it's Alex Ferguson made some, you know, not so successful signings, but it's a portfolio approach, because it's not like buying a machine that, you know, is going to churn out so many cars per hour or whatever. It's, you know, buying a human asset that, you know, you think will fit into your team, but then it all comes down to personality, ability, this, that and the other. It doesn't always work out. So it's, you've got to get more right than wrong, and the ones you get wrong are hopefully the ones you spent less money on, because you never know what, you know, you buy a player for 30 million, it's never the right amount. Some players are worth 60 and some are worth nothing. You know, it's rarely worth around that 30 million.
I don't think any managers ever had to deal with the issues that we've had just in the right wing position alone, with Greenwood, with Antony, with Sancho. Yeah. Like, it's chaos, isn't it?
Yeah. No,
you see them situations there. You know, I know you're not going to go too deep into it, but like, in terms of like, we're seeing so much come out of the club at the moment that's negative, and it's almost like a soap opera. Yeah. How do you manage that, something like that, and bring it all back into the machine to stay in there and become that place where it's not siege mentality, but where it's a unified approach, looking approach, which is very much not at the moment.
But I think, you know, I think it's a difficult position, that, because if we were doing better, I think less would come out, you know, doing better on the pitch. But I think the whole proliferation of media outlets and media coverage on football has gone through the roof, Rio. So, you know, I what we had to deal with in 2013 was a lot less than you have to do today. And I generally have to look at what's happening in our own, Manchester's own digital assets. You know, I'm getting notifications on my thing, what's had a training today, all, you know, getting everything 2 minutes, you know, and who's arriving at the ground for the game. You think, someone interested in this? But yeah, they clearly are. So I think it's difficult. But I think it comes down to, you know, to me, you know, from an executive side, you know, I would be getting my executive team together and saying, look, you know, you've got to impress upon, you know, the importance of confidentiality and being proper to the club. And then on the football side, the manager, presumably, and his staff trying to sort of, you know, tell the players about that. But, you know, players will go back, speak to their agents, and it's not necessarily the players who've spoken to the press, or their agents are speaking to another person. So I think you've got to be, you know, without doubt, you know, you don't see as much coming out of City or Liverpool with having a better season and things like that. We have to get back to doing better, and I think there would be less negative stories. I
mean, you said the same thing, really. You said, like, you weren't an angel, you would say, but you kind of knew there was awareness, you know, you knew when to step out, when to not step in. And obviously Sir Alex Ferguson had eyes and ears everywhere.
Yeah, you just knew as a player that there are the right times and the wrong times to go out. Mm. But we had a manager that if you did go out at the wrong time, you knew there was no hiding place. Mm. Like Mr. Gill said, it's black and white of him. You shouldn't be out. What are you doing out? Fine. And the paperwork will come from Mr. Gill.
Oh, really?
It seems there maybe isn't that kind of authoritative figure there.
No, I agree. But that comes down from the dressing room and understanding and all of that. But I get a silly little anecdote, or not an example, is, you know, I'm reading about the Sir Bobby Charlton stand leaking roof. Mm. Trust me, that roof leaked when we were there, but we happened to be top of the league. So it's not mentioned in the papers or the media. You know, it leaked. Mm. I mean, you know, perhaps it leaks a bit more now, I don't know. But all I'm saying, so those sort of things, you know, success, you know, covers up a lot of issues. And I think we've just got to get back to that. And I think, you know, that whole, you know, perhaps over the year, last few years, the club's been drifting. And I think this whole focus now with new ownership, you know, or new partial ownership taking over the football side, it will really hopefully galvanise everyone in the club, the fans, to say, let's get behind it. New ideas, this new appointment you mentioned of Berada. And you know, that's, it is an opportunity to get back to being, you know, a proper family club, you know, which a lot of football clubs are, I hasten to add, with that sort of real motivation.
So Jim Ratcliffe and David Brasford, I mean, all the fans want to know what they're like. Mm. Are they the right people? Mm. You've obviously had a little bit of time with those guys. Mm. What do you see in those that could become a group that becomes successful?
Well, I think that Dave Brailsford was doing that audit at the moment with Jean-Claude Blanc. And I don't know Dave Brailsford that much. I met him a few times, but I know Jean-Claude Blanc. He was at Juventus and then PSG, and he's an experienced executive in the football world and knows what works and what doesn't work, I think. So that's, you know, that's positive. And I think, you know, Brailsford has shown, albeit in slightly different sports, you know, that he's a winner as well. And I think he will leave no stone unturned. And seeing, you know, for example, what's happened with this appointment, you know, they're prepared to act quickly. It's got to get approved by the Premier League, but they're prepared to act quickly. And they understand, you know, that we have to win. You're not guaranteed it, but we have to win and get that into everyone. And, you know, coming the latter days of Arsenal, where with Arsenal, you know, and they're saying Champions League is acceptable, we'll get into the top three or four to get in the Champions League, that was deemed to be acceptable, and the old run in the cup. Well, that's not good enough, you know, and I don't think it's good enough for Arsenal, in fairness, but also, you know, for us, and we've got to get back, we've got to get, you know, qualify for the Champions League is,
minimum.
Yeah, I mean, we should be up there challenging. You might, like Liverpool, might miss out in the league, the City by a point or a goal difference, but at least you've been there right until the death. Mm. And that's what we want, isn't it? Mm. And so I think, and Jim Ratcliffe, clearly a very, very wealthy man. You know, he's very successful business. He's now got into sport. He's obviously got a passion for certain sports. And I think he's, you know, you have to speak to him. But clearly, just over 70, and he wants to enjoy his money. And I think he, you know, the fact he's from the area, I think, again, he's got to be looked at positively. Mm.
Are you excited from what you've seen and heard?
I am, yeah. I think there'll be some good moves, and I think there are a lot of very good people at Manchester United. I mean, you know, it's not as if we have to get rid of, you know, all these people. There are some very good people at Manchester United. I just think they need a new direction and a new motivation and outlook. And I think we've got that, so I am positive. But the proof will be in the pudding and in the eating.
Off United for a second, although it's not entirely good. Off us.
The pressure's off now. Yeah.
Is the European Super League still a threat?
No. I think personally, I think
that was a quick answer.
I don't think the economics are there. What I see is that, you know, and I've seen it a bit within UEFA, is that there was this court decision back in just before Christmas about, you know, which the Super League clubs have brought, and, you know, I think, reading that, I think over time there will be, the clubs will get more control of some of the competitions they play in. I.e., you know, at the moment, so for example, the Champions League format changes from 24-25 onwards. There's now a joint venture set up between the clubs and UEFA. And so I see it within UEFA, there's more input, so to speak, and more control and more involvement, which is probably right by the clubs. If I was at Manchester United, I'd want that on that. So I see more of that going forward, but I don't think the, you know, Super League will come around. I think I don't think as much appetite as that. Be interested to see what all the Saudi money does, because I think that's another interesting development in the world of football, world of sport generally, but football as well. And so, but I don't see that as a threat now. But I wouldn't be complacent, by the way. If I was UEFA, I'd be looking at the, you know, speaking to the clubs, continue involved and make sure we're developing the competitions. And I think this new Swiss league next year, we'll see how it works. But at least is trying to address and look at, you know, what the competition needs to do.
I was going to say Saudi a threat, but I'm going to rephrase that and just say, is there a possibility of Saudi getting a place inside UEFA?
No, no chance.
Again, really quick.
Yeah, no chance.
He's involved. He's in the.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah. No he's chance. At the table. He's, yeah, he's yeah, leader
yeah,
of the table.
Yeah, yeah, no chance.
Has that been raised?
No. No, that's not. Yeah, no. I just don't think so. I think there's, you know, the economics are such, and the way it's worked out, I think, you know, that's, you know, I just can't see that happening. Now, that's not to say Saudi, and you know, the money they've got, the World Cup in 34, in all probability, the money they're playing, you know, that's would be interesting how all that develops, because, you know, it's. Whilst it's not direct, you know, clearly if some players can go from earning a hell of a lot of money in the UK to there for even more money, you know, what impact that has. You know, whether the younger players will start to go, I don't know. You might get a player going at 24, 5 years at Saudi, makes a great money, and then comes back and plays in Europe. I don't know whether he can develop as much. But I think what I would say is, I don't say it that, but that's not to say I've got all the answers or know everything, but I think that, you know, the authorities, the leagues and the FA should be discussing it and seeing what the implications are. You know, we've seen that in other sports, what they're doing.
Just lighten the mood before us, before Mr. Gill goes. I think we've been a bit serious, haven't we? Yeah. He's been like that at the back of the chair.
No.
But he's a couple of quick fire ones. Best top three signings where you see.
Don't say Rio.
I can't, Rio, because it's not the case. So, yeah.
Not including me.
No, the top three signings I would say would be Wayne, in terms of what he did for the club. I would say Michael Carrick for what he brought in terms of all that, and then I would say I can have two. There's a lot. Vidic and Evra.
I thought would have been first.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
But I think in terms of the importance of the club,
the world captain
was. I think one of the most important ones was Edwin, because we struggled to replace the. Replace Peter, and then we went out and got Edwin, and he was great for us for a few years.
Did Sir Alex have a regret about not signing him immediately after Peter Schmeichel?
Don't think so. Well, he probably did, but he wouldn't say that to me. I don't know.
No. I thought Edwin would have come here and be CEO. Yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah. Could you?
I don't know about that. Yeah, I think he certainly had that presence and things like that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Hardest player to work with.
Well, you know the answer, don't you?
Who?
Real?
No. Gary.
Why? Why is he so difficult to work with?
He doesn't stop talking. No, he doesn't. Yeah. No. All in all, they're all. Yeah, no. It's fine. I think they're all. Yeah, it's like anything, you know. The most important thing is you had individuals. They all have personalities, so we're going to have issues. You know, I think I'm probably hard to deal with, but you know, you they want Man United to do well. So. No, I don't think, Gary probably. Who else?
Does Daniel Levy's reputation as being difficult to work with valid?
I think he's protecting his club. So is that a polite way of saying yes?
But you respect
it,
no?
Yeah, I respect him. I thought he was good. I liked him. What he's done with that stadium is fantastic and things like that. But yeah, he was clearly...
No one goes Spurs and gets a deal, does he?
Yeah. No. And I think he may, you know, and I think he's, you know, he can... not do himself any favours. I'll give you an example of that. You know, when we bought Dimitar, we had him all summer. And we ended up sort of, right at the desk getting him. But he had no replacement. So Fraser Campbell was going on loan to Bolton, I think it was. Alex had to ring him up saying, by the way, no, you're not going on loan to Bolton, you're going to Tottenham. So my point being that, you know, Daniel probably got another million or two out of us. I forget the figures, but... I don't, but I'm not telling you. He could have got that, say, 3 weeks earlier or 2 weeks earlier, and he can then have a, you know, perhaps a different replacement. Nothing against Fraser Campbell, but you know, that was what I'm trying to say.
What's your most proudest moment whilst working at Manchester United?
It depends. I mean, the best moment I think was, you know, was lots of winning trophies, but the best one was in 2007 when we won the league. We hadn't won it for a while. And I think, you know, because as a CEO, we come in and, you know, I think we were, you know, we hadn't done it. So to win that was fantastic. So that was great. But all the trophies were great. I loved winning the trophies and having the parties. And then the rest was just, Yeah, I think we continue to develop the club in terms of, you know, the staff and things like that. And I think, you know, we had some, you know, good initiatives there.
I want to quickly elaborate on that. Did you ever feel at one point that it was going to be hard to come back to the top when Abramovich came in and, you know,
not really.
Is there because no. They're spending all this money?
They were, but that, yeah, we got some of that for Verona and something like that, so we did quite well. So, no, but I think that's a good thing about football, isn't it? It's always competition, and I think, you know, it means that, you know, there's always going to be, probably even more teams can win the league now than previously. But I think the very fact that, you know, you haven't got a league like, you know, Germany, although Leverkusen is doing quite well this year, or PSG or whatever, I think made it very attractive. So I think all that did was, you know, it was effectively, you know, galvanise us and make sure that we sort of worked even harder to do well. So, for example, I remember when I joined United, and, you know, and look at the number of points we won to win the league in the late, it's like, you know, 76, 78. Mm-hmm. So I remember Alex saying that effectively, if you sort of get 2 points a game, i.e. win your home game, draw your ways, you're going to be there or thereabouts. And that was used to be the norm. Now you get teams winning with 90-odd, and we had to change. And Alex always felt, you know, you have a, you know, slower start. We had to hit the ground running from August, you know, to win the league. So I think competition is great. You learn through competition and you develop it.
Sorry, this is a selfish one. This one, I just want to know. What's your thoughts on how Arsenal are redeveloping? Obviously, since Arsene Wenger's gone, we went through a little bit of a lull. When you're looking from the outside in?
I don't know.
You don't care.
Yeah, he's stacking the trophies on top.
No. I think they've done some good player deals and things like that. I think Arteta.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, I don't really care.
This is Mr. Man United here we're talking to.
Yeah, I don't really care.
My last question, Mr. Gill, before you go, is we won the double. We won the Premier League and the Champions League in 2008, right?
You don't know that tune.
And
FA Cup and Premier League.
And I remember getting on the plane. I was in a bad way, hangover, by the way. And I just remember being told. I remember asking. So what's the route we're taking on the open bus tour? Open top bus tour. And I remember being told there isn't one. Mm. I was like, what? Why didn't we have a tour?
The council were.
It was Rangers, wasn't it?
You can't win the Premier League and the Champions League and not do a tour.
You should have done, I agree. Rangers, I mean, in retrospect, you did it, but I think they're much more organised now. Manchester, you know, perhaps at the time more difficult. We should have done it, I agree. I can't remember the exact reasons why we didn't do it, but we should have done it.
So. Yeah, they're more organised now because they only have to have them one deep for City, so it's not hard, is it? They have three stewards and four cones out. It's solid.
But I think, going back to your point, aggressing, just working for the club is brilliant.
Yeah,
I wasn't good enough to play football. I played, you know, as a lad and this and the other. I wasn't good enough. So to actually work in it and combine, you know, that and whatever, it's a privilege. And I think, you know, people say to me, or if someone came to me today and I was, you know, 25 years younger and said, look, you can join Man United, even with it, I said, fantastic. Mm. I mean, you know, until you get in it, you know, everyone's interested in it, or sport in particular. You know, and Manchester United's place in that. And I tried it when I was there. That's why I worked with the FA, worked with the Premier League, worked with UEFA, because Manchester United should be outside in these bodies trying to, you know, affect how the game's going and be influential and be involved. So to me, you know, it was all great. It's difficult to pick out one or two particular things, but winning trophies, you know, seeing other staff develop and just being involved day to day, I used to love it. Mm.
Did you know Mr. Gill's son used to play for Man United?
No way.
Ollie, yeah. What's he doing now?
He's like his dad. He's born accountant.
Is he?
He's with Deloitte. He's a Deloitte.
Earning the money, though, I bet.
He's a
centre-half.
I would love, I would love to have played, but, you know, unfortunately, not good enough.
He did all right.
Yeah. No, it's great, and I love it. And I, you know, I'm really. To your point, I'm positive about the future. I think we can do it. Things are going in cycles, and, you know, I think we the first part of, you know, getting back up is to address the problems and understand them, and then you can start working on them. And I think we're doing that.
Well, what a way to finish. Positivity, I like that.
I love that.
I'm energised about the club now. Thanks you very much, Mr. Gill.